So we have a little bit of time for any questions, 10 minutes if there's any questions. There may or may not be.
May I ask you, it was very interesting, very interesting. This means what you've said, that it's a very hard work to reach this, to bridge this gap, to reach this destination of which we don't know anything. Is that so?
Yes, that's a very good question. I want to say no immediately.
How do we get motivated?
Yes, indeed, yeah. So what the problem of how I just pictured things is it sounds like very hard work, doesn't it? It sounds almost nigh on impossible to go from an unknown to another unknown. And how do we get motivated? So one way of answering that is that actually it's the reverse of that. It's our current way of living that's hard work. It's our current habitualized mindset that's hard work. So right from the start I was saying that actually what we do is we try and grasp more pleasure, we get less pleasure. What we try and do is we try and push away pain, and we get more pain. It's that kind of mind that we've got now that's really hard work. And that kind of mind never solves itself. It's a bit like saying, okay, let's change the world, and we'll change the world by covering the world in leather, and then I'll just be able to walk on it. The Buddha is saying, how about you buy some shoes? Yeah? In other words, how about you change your mind so that you can walk on the world? Yeah? Otherwise, we have to change the world so it fits our mind, so that we get as much pleasure as possible and as least pain as possible. I would say that our mind, as it is what's hard work, really. The difficulty is that we don't realise that. We are so habituated to our mind that even when we're unhappy, we kind of think this is all we can do, don't we? It's funny that we can actually get ourselves into a very unhappy state in a lifestyle that really doesn't work for us, and somehow think, oh well, can't do anything about it, if you mean. So I think one of the things that's really vital is we need to go on retreat, because it's on retreat that you start to experience this new mind. And when you experience that new mind on retreat, you just think, oh crikey, this is much better. This is much better. This is just so much better. I just had a really sort of lovely experience on Dharmagiri just now. I had this morning where, I don't know, my meditation perhaps was a little bit better. You know, I've been there for a few days, I've been doing the things I was saying, I was living, you know, I was assiduously practicing, I was living a lifestyle that supported it, I was serving the Dharma, and I was practicing with some intensity. By about day three, I had this morning where I was just sitting there outside, and I just thought, and all that came to me is I just thought, this is good. This is good, this. This is good, this life. And it was just sitting outside at Dharmagiri with the sun shining on this wonderful field, and the river in the distance glimmering, and birds singing. I wasn't listening to my iPhone, I wasn't texting anybody, I wasn't planning anything, I wasn't criticising anybody in my mind. I was just sitting there, and I thought, oh, this is good. This lovely sense of, oh, I'm back, I'm back. I'm back in my life. Do you see what I mean? I'm back in this life that's worthwhile, that I appreciate, that I love, you know what I mean? It's just that we get so habituated to a life that's not like that, and we're in the midst of a world that so doesn't value those things, that keeps on saying, no, don't worry, just buy something. You know, if you feel a bit uncomfortable, just buy something. You can do it now just by pressing your thumb, can't you, on a thing, you know. We live in a world that constantly encouraging us to be greedy, and actually encouraging us to be frightened, and encouraging us to be hateful, really. I mean, the amount of things in the media that are saying be frightened, and yes, here are the people who are to blame. You know, they're fostering our negativities. We live saturated by media. On retreat, you remember what it is to be a human being, you know, in this simple way of sitting outside. Sometimes you just get this sense that this is good. And in the early days of the Buddhist tradition, the Dharma life was just called the good life. It's just the good life. When you're in touch with it, it doesn't feel really hard. It feels the most natural thing in the world. It's just that the work we need to do is to get away from the habituated, often quite unhappy mindset that we're already in. We need to make a bit of effort for that. Largely the effort is to put ourselves in good conditions. So I'd say that the answer to that is to go on retreat. And then you have this experience of, this is good. This is just what I should... This is like a plant having sunlight and grain. This is what my being has always needed. That's what you experience, isn't it? When you touch the Dharma, you think, oh, what a relief. Ah, this is me, you know, waking up. I've got rain now. I'm living now. Yeah, but very good question, yeah. How I talked about it could suggest that, I think.
I suppose you could also say that it's being in contact with the seed of awakening or awakening yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And that sounds very grand, but it's not so grand. It's just, because you think in contact with the Buddha. The Buddha we make into this, not here, but we make into this sort of gold, very, very distant, very imposing figure. We sort of make him very, very far away from us. It's just that sense of being in touch with value. As soon as you're in touch with, this is good, this is me living now, this is me actually in my life, oh, what a relief. As soon as you're in touch with that, you're in touch with the Buddha. He could sit next to you then. You know what I mean? There's a lovely, we were reading from the Purabeda Sutra, and one of the things that really struck me about it is it talks about the Buddha being
unobtrusive,
yeah. I was really struck by that. He's unobtrusive. And isn't that incredibly, exquisitely right? So he's not a golden figure on a throne, that if you were to meet him, he'd be unobtrusive. And he'd have to be unobtrusive because there's no egotism there. So he'd just be able to just be there with you. He wouldn't sort of appear in a grand fanfare. He'd be unobtrusive. So sometimes when we're in touch with the Dharma, we're in touch with that simplicity, that you don't need anything anymore. You're not hankering anymore. You're just all right. It's all right. And that simple sensation is being in touch with the Buddha. It's not this great, grand, gold brocade. It's something simply and deeply human, which if you follow all the way through, becomes that enlightened consciousness. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So you can kind of convey it, but still not, you know, preach.
You not preach, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting that Buddhism traditionally has not preached. Bhante once says, you should practice what you don't preach, which I thought is much better. Instead of you should practice what you preach, you should practice what you don't preach. My own feeling usually is that you wait and see if they're interested. And unless they are, you don't talk about it. You know, you don't hide it. You don't say, I'm not telling you what I'm doing tonight. You know what I mean? secret, you know. Sorry, you know, mystical secret. Woo! You know, you don't do it. But you don't... I remember once I went to this wedding. You know, I don't like weddings, I'm afraid. I don't like social gatherings very much. And it was a nurse friend of mine. I used to be a nurse many years ago. And of course there were all these nurse colleagues from mine from many, many years back. You know, and as the wedding was going on, they were getting more and more tanked. Is that a Swedish word? You know, drink, you know, they were getting more and more that way. And this old friend of mine came and she said, okay, you're slurring a speech. You know, you're into that Buddhism thing. Sell it to me. You know, she could barely stand up. And the fool that I was at the time, I tried to say, explain what Buddhism is to this tottering, you know, woman. Well, I should have just said, you know, it's not the time just now. yeah, so I think generally it's better, you know, just say, well, I'm going on, I'm fine. But what is really convinces people, what is to practice what you don't preach, isn't it? So people are going to be much more struck by the Dharma because they see you becoming happier. They see you becoming deeper, better, bigger. Sometimes they're challenged by that as well. I remember when I first became a vegetarian, sometimes people would really almost feel offended. I'd say, oh, sorry, I don't eat meat. And they'd get slightly aggressive with me. And they'd say, what do you mean? Don't you eat fish? And then say, you'll die of malnutrition by the end of the week. You know? Seems to be the usual argument. And obviously, all it was is they felt criticised. Which effectively it is, actually. You are, when you become a vegetarian, you are sort of criticising people. Just as when you don't drink, you are saying something about drinking, aren't you? You can't help it. You don't mean to criticise them. You don't intend to say, and you shouldn't do it either. But your actions are doing that. So, you know, you just have to sort of say, you know, I am a vegetarian, yeah. You know. I think Buddhists should stick out a bit. I think Buddhists shouldn't fit in. Some people are very concerned about whether they fit in or not. Just don't bother. You know, you don't fit in. Nobody fits in, so don't try. And as a Buddhist, you certainly shouldn't fit in. But Buddhists should be a bit difficult to manage. They should, not in the kind of, oh my God, they're a headache. But you can't quite fit them. You can't quite, they don't just fit into social life. They don't. In the old days, when Sangharakshita first came to the West, Christmas Humphreys, who was running the Buddhist Society at the time, he said his sign of a good Buddhist is when nobody knew they were a Buddhist. So in other words, they just did exactly what everybody else did. So that was great, apparently. You know, they drank and ate bits of pig and all that sort of thing, and that was great, you know what I mean? So actually, Buddhists should stick out a bit, even if it's just... you know, very, very, very simple things, things like not swearing or not gossiping or not backbiting or being honest. I think one of the things I really appreciated when I first came to this, got involved with this community, is it was somewhere I could actually say the truth. I could say, actually, I'm not in a great state at the moment. And I didn't have people joking about it or, you know, I could just tell it how it was, you know, such a relief. So, no, I don't think you should fit in. I don't think you should preach, and I think people are best convinced by how you change. If you see what I mean. And then just, when they're ready, invite them along if they want to come. I remember I went to see my partner's family in New Zealand, and his father was dying. You know, he had cancer. And about halfway through my stay, he said to me, would you be willing to teach me meditation? And I said, yeah, of course I would, yeah. When would you like to do that? You know, he knew I'd been a Buddhist for many years. And we did it. And then afterwards, he said, I was really surprised that you, when you came, that you didn't try and teach me. That you didn't say, how about I teach you meditation? How about I teach you about Buddhism and reality? And I said to him, I know what's happening to you. I don't want to come along to you with cheery solutions. You know, including cheery Buddhist solutions, I find that unbearable thought. You know what I mean? So patronising. What I wanted is, if he wanted me to help, then I could help. Yeah? It was going to be much more helpful if he wanted me to. I might have offered, perhaps, but I wanted to make it really clear that it was up to him. You have to be a Buddhist completely freely. Nobody can persuade you. If you need to persuade anyone, it's not worth talking to them about it. If people are interested, great, then just say, well, you might read, this is really good, I really got a lot from that, and I went to this class, that was great, try that. But people need to be free, don't they? Which is free to be a Buddhist and free not to be. You've got a question, yeah.
We shouldn't preach, but we should stick out. And people get provoked, or people get inspired.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't get it because it sounds too much, some little bit of, dark standard might sound crass, but it sounds,
yes.
It gets too abstract for me.
Does it, yeah.
Like you said, I mostly encounter people feeling provoked or uncomfortable.
Right, yeah,
I
yeah.
I don't drink, I don't
right.
watch TV.
Right, yeah.
Casual relationships, yes. With no point, with no reason.
Yes, that's right.
I inspire people, I yeah. You're uncomfortable most of the time. I think.
Right, yeah.
So then what's, I just feel like, it's like that R.E.M. song, it's the end of the world, but I feel fine.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. I mean,
the world won't listen, is the way I feel, and I don't feel bitter about it.
Yeah, yeah.
They won't listen.
I mean, that's...
I've encountered our truth, I believe it's the truth.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The experience I have, most of the people, they won't listen.
Yes, I'm sure.
Time of age, but all these stimulants everywhere, with the iPhone, with the computer, with the YouTube. Before we had like preachers or prophets or whatever, all this. But nowadays I feel it's more difficult.
I think it is much more difficult. I think there's never... In some ways, it's a wonderful moment for the Dharma because there's so much Dharma available, but it's never been so hard to teach it. There's never been so many ways of dribbling your time away. I think this is one of the things that's striking me about modern life, is just how easy it is to waste time, to do things that don't add to anybody's life, least of all your own. It's never been so easy to waste time. You can waste a huge amount of time, can't you, on that computer, just without hardly thinking about it. So, of course, it's going to be very, very difficult to talk to people whose minds are caught up like that. So I think you're right. I think many people can't listen, won't listen. Some will, though. I mean...
But if you want to change the world, what's the point of some listening? We need a big majority.
No, I think it's... I don't agree. I think all you need... Well, from I would say this, but...
See the environment for issue.
Well, yes, indeed, but... Yes, indeed. But all you need is 10%. So, there's a lovely story about Bhante Sangharaj. He was, I'll perhaps finish with this because we're going over time, but he was going to some bookshops in central London, and he used to go around the second-hand bookshop, and he got on the tube to go back to the London Buddhist Centre. And he said that he was sitting on the tube, and he was just sort of looking around, and he thought, about 10%. About 10% of the people on this tube potentially could be open to the Dharma. They're not necessarily, but about 10%. That was his instinct, is that if you look around the world, about 10% of people are going to be interested. That's not many, you know, that's 90% of people who aren't, 10% of people who are. Now 10% of Stockholm's a lot of people. 10% of Sweden's a lot of people. 10% of Europe is a huge amount of people. You know what I mean? All you need is 10%. 10% of people who are really doing the things that I'm saying, not just calling themselves a Buddhist, but living that assiduous Dharma practice, da, 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 all those things. 10% of people doing that is a revolutionary force in the world. No doubt. Absolutely no doubt. You don't need that many, because when you've got people in relationship with each other, who share those ideals, they kind of spark off each other. They create more energy between each other. It's amazing what you can do when you're working with like-minded people, isn't it? When people will listen, when you can work together. Now, that's not as easy as it sounds, but 10% must be doable, isn't it? But our job is to find ways of talking to those 10%, not preaching to them, which usually just means telling them what they should think. But the traditional epithet is that the Dharma is of the nature of a personal invitation. So when you feel like you've heard the Dharma, you feel that that person has been talking directly to you about the issues of their life. When I first listened to Sangharaj's lecture, you know, we used to listen to these tape lectures, and he taught this lecture called Breaking Through to Buddhahood. I was 25, sitting in his cold, drafty room, thinking, how does this guy know me so well? How has he got into my mind like this and seen what I've been doing in my life? And how has he been able to explicate that for me and then tell me what I need to do? That's the sense of meeting the Dharma, is you feel personally invited. But you won't do that if there's no Buddhist centres, if there's no retreat centres, if there's people aren't teaching. Do you see what I mean? So, it's not impossible, but it does require us to do those things that I was saying, I think. It's a challenge to us all. People won't be able to change the environment unless they change their mind. My own hunch is that human beings won't do anything until they absolutely have to, unfortunately, by which time it may be too late. But there you go. I think the planet may end up off shrugging us off rather than us saving the planet. We may have become an infestation. Yes, I think there is always the 10%. I think that's a very reasonable estimate. One more question, then we'll finish.
You were describing the different aspects of spiritual practice. When you talk about lifestyle, I got the impression that you describe a situation that we should strive for with giving space to sitting, giving space to reflection.
Yes, sometimes, yeah.
I struggle with little time.
Yes, we all do.
Because I serve. For example, I have a child that takes a lot of time and it's
yes,
a lot of
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. As I see it, but I lack the connection to that kind of the intensity in my with the Western view on Buddhism. I also travel a lot in Asia and know that people in these cultures are not sitting all the time.
No. I mean,
in general,
traditional Buddhism, people don't meditating very much.
So what is your reflection? Is it really necessary to strive for the solitude?
Not necessarily solitude, and I'm not sure I always mean space for meditation, space for reflection, so though I do mean that, I include that. I think it's interesting, this whole question of children, because children are a massive issue in our life. I've recently had children in my life, which I frankly never expected to have, as you can tell. Suddenly I've got children in my life, and it's surprising how much of my life has focused around them. I'm not their father, but I'm much closer to being a father than I ever thought I would be. I emotionally can feel how important they are to me. I never expected that. And they're hugely, as it were, time-consuming, life-consuming, aren't they? And I'm sort of happy enough with, I'm not unhappy with that in a sense. But how do we do that and make sure we keep up our friendships, keep up meditation and so on? Recently, Bhante said to somebody, an order member who just had children, you must make that into your practice. That's all you can do. It's going to be very difficult, but you must make that into your practice. And he said, you must not look back, don't look back repining, which means... don't repine, which means look back with regret. So he would say you have to make your lifestyle into a Dharma practice. And that means reflecting in the experience. It means when your daughter or son doesn't do what you want, feeling that painful arising and feeling into that, opening into that, finding an insight in that, if you see what I mean. Somehow it also, I think, means we need, as a collective, experiment more with lifestyles. What concerns me around lifestyle at the moment is that people seem to end up with a whole kit and caboodle. We end up going down the thoroughly conventional world with the whole thing. Can we not start to experiment a bit more about how we can, if we want children and families, which is completely up to us, how can we do that in a new way that allows for more space for meditation and friendship and so on, but also allows for the emotional primacy of children? I don't have any solutions, but I'd like to see us more sort of radical about these things. We seem to end up going down the whole conventional line, and I think there might be new ways that we could discover if we were courageous enough. Yes, I think you have to. Yeah. I think we have to anyway, irrespective of whether you've got children. I think that whole tendency in the West to make spiritual life an individual, private matter is not Buddhist. It's nothing like Buddhism. I think what happens is people become meditationist rather than Buddhists. I meet people sometimes and I think, well, it sounds like you're just a meditationist. I see you're committed to that, but I don't think that's what the Buddha taught. You know what I mean? He didn't teach meditationism, he taught Buddhism, yeah. And that's very much to do with, as much to do with friendship and so on. So I think we need that anyway, and if you have a family, you've got to do that. because frankly you won't have much time to do anything else. But it is up to you. When you're pushing the swing, you can be doing, as I've been doing, you can be doing a mantra. When they don't want to do it, you can feel the discomfort and try and find a way of working with it. You can find ways of bringing your friends involved. You can think, okay, well, I'll put on a family event at the centre so that other families can do something.
Yes.
Thank you. It's very striking. There needs to be more family events at the centre. But the people with families always say they're too busy to do them. The people who haven't got them don't want to do them. But hey, can we break out of that? You know what I mean? How about a few people with families said, look, every Saturday morning, we'll organise it together so we have a bit of a creche in that funny room over there where it's like being locked in the cellar. Seems a good place. And other of us restless can meditate. You say, how about we do that? It's not that difficult. It means a bit of action, doesn't it? But come on. It's not that, you know, it's not that difficult. You know what I mean? So that's what I mean. That's a very simple way, I would say, of experimenting with lifestyle. And probably we should finish there.